This is a coastal story. Written and presented by Charlie Colony. There's always been a certain romance attached to the hermit. Those people who, since pretty much the dawn of time, have chosen a life away from the world. A solitary existence of contemplation, rejecting the norms and conventions of modern life in favour of a simple, solo existence. You don't see them so often these days, but they're there all through history. In the 18th century, they even became fashionable. The wealthy would employ someone to live humbly in their newly landscaped grounds as a kind of weird garden ornament that you'd never find in B&Q. Many of those choosing a life alone would head for the coast. Maybe it was the prospect of an unbroken horizon, eternity stretching before them, a vista ideal to contemplate. Or maybe it was because there was a ready supply of free fish, not to mention handy bits of wood and rope, washing up now and again to build things with. Or maybe they arrived at the coast simply because they couldn't go any further. They travelled as far as they could from whatever it was that prompted their decision to step aside from the life they were expected to live. Many of these coastal hermits became well-known local characters. Myths would spring up about their circumstances, about what had brought them there. Sometimes those myths might even have been started by the hermits themselves. Fresh start and all that. New story. Better than the old one. Most locals saw them as harmless eccentrics, but a few would find them threatening or resent how they'd managed to shake off the net of responsibilities in which they themselves had become enmeshed. But mostly the hermits were left to themselves. In 1906, an elderly man arrived at Aberdour Beach in the northeast of Scotland and set up home in a small cave. He collected driftwood and sacking to build a bed and used a crate to sit on in front of a rickety old card table he'd found. And that was it. He lived on fish and shellfish and kept himself to himself. He had a Bible that he'd read, and also a copy of Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, which he declared to be his favourite book. Before long, especially in the summer, people began to visit him, and he was happy to talk to them, telling them how he spent his time reading and meditating, and, as for fear, I fear only God. After a few years, he began to reveal snippets of his story. His name, he said, was Edward Reed, born in Tyrone around 1840, but raised in Glasgow. As soon as he was old enough to work for a living, he saved up his money and emigrated to America, where he lost an eye serving in the American Navy during the Civil War. After that, he joined the American Merchant Marine for a while, but grew disillusioned with life at sea. He returned to Scotland and took to the roads, picking up what work he could where he could, until that day in 1906 when he reached the beach at Aberdour, found he could walk no further, looked around, spotted the cave, and decided that this was where he'd stay. In 1920, something very similar happened at Sunnyside Beach, not far from Cullen on the Moray Firth in Aberdeenshire. A man with a white beard, light on possessions but clearly bearing the weight of a story on his shoulders, arrived at the shore, sized up a cleft in the cliffs, and made it his home. Over the years, he became a familiar sight. Charlie the Hermit, they called him. He made additions to his hermitage, using driftwood to extend it outwards, and even adding a front door. He carried soil down from the top of the cliffs and started a little vegetable garden. Unusually for the time, Charlie the Hermit was a vegetarian, but he'd also make some cash by catching fish and snaring rabbits and selling them to visitors. A local photographer even made postcards of Charlie posing outside his dwelling and gave him copies to sell. He acquired a fiddle from somewhere and would sit outside his door, looking out at the waves, playing tunes to the tides. Those who spoke to him noted an accent. Welsh, some said. German, said others, or maybe Dutch. Either way, he was always welcoming to visitors and keen to practice his English. As it turned out, Charlie the Hermit was French, and his name was Charles Marion. During the First World War, he'd served in the French Navy, but had deserted at Pembroke Dock in Wales, and just started walking. Like Edward Reed, picking up bits of seasonal work, drifting gradually northeast until the waves of the North Sea lapped at his feet and there was just horizon beyond. The trickle of visitors he received was steady enough during the summer to rub some people up the wrong way, not least a Mrs. Murray, who grazed cattle on the land overlooking Charlie's home. In 1933, an official complaint was made, and Charlie was summoned to court, charged with having failed to register as an alien when he arrived in the area 13 years earlier. It was petty, it was an open and shut case. Charlie was fined 20 shillings, ordered to quit his accommodation, and proceed to Banff to register as an alien. The hearing was a good-natured affair, as there was great local affection for Charlie. The judge wished him bon voyage. Charlie replied, merci bien, and off he went. April 1901. A woman arrives on the beach at Ardmaddy, about 10 miles south of Oban on the western coast of the Scottish Highlands, and doesn't leave. There's no cave or cleft there, and she builds no shelter. She just sleeps in the open, in all weathers, and swims in the sea every day, in all weathers. By the autumn, she's become a well-known figure in the area, and begins to reveal snippets of information to those who would approach her. Her name was Margaret MacDougall, she said, and she was originally from the Isle of Tiree in the Inner Hebrides. She'd been a nursemaid and a housekeeper, but most recently had been working in a Glasgow laundry, until a few months earlier when she developed rheumatism in her hands. On seeking treatment, she was told the constant immersion of her hands in water would only aggravate the condition, and she was forced to give up her job. Out of work, and apparently unwilling to seek help from friends and family, she packed up her things and began walking. Until, after a month on the road, she reached the shore at Ardmaddy and could walk no further. A hermit who wasn't a crusty old boy with a matted beard was quite the draw for the papers. The story of the mysterious Ardmaddy hermit appeared on both sides of the Atlantic, with the mystery woman described in meticulous detail. How her dress was short, reaching only halfway between the knee and the ankle. And her hair, it was reddish auburn and, quote, might be the envy of any London society beauty. She remained living on the beach for the whole of that winter, even receiving post addressed to her there, until in the spring of 1902 she was arrested for trespass and vagrancy. Possibly for her own good, as she'd refused all offers of accommodation, food and warm clothing, and she was suffering from pleurisy at the time. The apparent Margaret MacDougall from Tiree, this time gave police the name Christina McMaster, and said she was from the island of Mull, and told the sheriff of her intention to keep living as she had been living, how she considered the earth to be free to all poor people. She consented to treatment at the local hospital, albeit reluctantly, but when she'd recovered her health enough, she slipped away quietly and headed further north, setting up home on the beach at Kilninver. Three fascinating, eccentric characters. And there were many more like them dotted around the coast of Britain and Ireland over the centuries. But what lay behind the romance of hermit life? Some would be motivated by religion, of course, but for the rest, it must have taken quite something to leave behind everything and everyone they knew and set out for the coast and live in desperate conditions, for decades in some cases. What level of trauma would it take to undertake this complete abandonment of one life to start another, alone and effectively destitute? The chance to invent a past life, even several past lives, to shield your entire past from other people and yourself, all alone. It may have had the sheen of romance, but life as a hermit was anything but romantic. After the First World War, several coastal locations reported men living alone in sand dunes, in dugouts they'd excavated for themselves to exactly the specifications of those in the trenches of the Western Front, for example. As for our three coastal hermits, the Ardmaddy hermit was found dead in a field after a fearsome blizzard just after Christmas 1907. She'd lived on the shore for 6 years by then. Her age was given on her death certificate as 35. Her name recorded as Margaret MacDougall or Christina McMaster. By 1918, Edward Reed was in poor health, and after a hard 16th winter in his cave at Aberdour, he moved voluntarily into the combination poorhouse at Maud, where he died in October that year, aged around 78. As for Charlie the Hermit, when he was wished bon voyage by the sheriff that day, he didn't go to Banff to register as an alien. Instead, he went south, to Leith Docks. He told someone he was close to in Cullen that he intended to take a ship to London where he'd go and see the French consul. He was going to make his peace with his home nation. He was going home to France. Now, we don't know if he was ever granted his consular audience. In 1937, 4 years after he'd left, word reached Cullen that Charlie the Hermit had died in Southampton in an internment camp. That was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Connolly, and a big thank you to everyone who donated this week. You're all proper toffs and no mistake. In addition to the snazzy new microphone stand I mentioned last time, I've now bought a fancy document holder from which I can read the stories far easier than when they're lying on the bath towel I drape over my desk when I do these things to help Coastal Stories sound like it isn't being recorded in a lavatory. ko-fi.com/coastalstories. That's ko-fi.com/coastalstories. If you want to donate the price of a pint, a pretty cheap pint at that, to help keep this thing careering onward, and who knows, maybe even sounding better. I'll stick a link in the description accompanying this episode. These waves were recorded shortly after a spectacular sunrise at Deal, at low tide, on the morning of the 19th of November 2020. It really was a doozy, You'll find a picture on my Twitter page, at Charlie Connolly. And I'll also put it on the donations page and the Facebook page too. It really is the kind of thing that makes it worth getting up and out before dawn every morning and throwing myself into the English Channel in a pair of shorts. And there's an image to leave.